It's been covered in this case by Ward Davis with a little help from Willie Nelson and Jamie Johnson. This is Old War Out Cowboys on Siren FM.
Shucks, Cameron, I just didn't have the heart to actually go and listen to the video of that because it was so darn depressing, boy, so darn depressing. Hopefully they didn't shoot the dog at the
depressing.
End of it. Well, let's find out what the team made of it. Emma Tinson, what did you make of Worn Out Cowboys? Wore Out Cowboys, even.
It was very mellow, but very sad.
Mellow, but sad. We're in tears here. John?
I enjoyed it. I do like country music, and I do like the maudlin aspects of it.
Yeah, normally Cameron starts off with a nice bright, upbeat number, though. It's very strange.
No, it was nice, like, mix of, you know, guitars and stuff in
I think country music's much maligned in terms of the sentimentality, because if you look at the lyrics of a lot of operas, the translations of them, they're just as corny
precisely.
As any country western
that
song.
That clown who dies in E. Pagliacci, heartbreaking, heartbreaking. And don't get me started on Carmen and Bizet, Lord above. But it's not Cameron Tilbury's... let's treat yourself to an operatic track slot. Although I'm sure we could actually look to introduce that, Cameron, as time goes by.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. No, not from me.
No. Well, there you go. Cameron, have we got any quick questions you want to put to either John Sawtelle or Emma Tinson whilst you're there and whilst we gear up for the next exciting segment of the Midweek Drive on Siren 107.3 FM?
No, I mean, I've never been to Australia, but we've got a lot of artists that we've worked there and have had really great success on radio there. And country music is huge in Australia. In fact, it's, you know, rodeo is big there, so it's in a lot of ways very similar to what's going on here in the U.S. You just have those accents and you're all criminals.
You see, you can say that as a Canadian, but, you know, I would dream to sort of go down that line. Goodness sakes.
Yes, now, look, there is a big country scene, and people like Casey Chambers, I think, have done well in the U.S., is that correct? Have you heard of her? No?
Yeah, and we actually saw last week at a showcase Diana Corcoran, who's from Australia.
Yep.
She was really good.
Mm.
Personally, Country Roads, Take Me Home to the Place I Belong, West Virginia, done by Olivia Newton-John, classic. You know, that's all I can say. That and Skippy the Bush Kangaroo, not that I want to go with cultural stereotypes here.
So why not?
It's a thought. Emma, last two questions for Cameron Tilbury, please.
Of course. Cameron, have you had a reasonably enjoyable telephonic link with us today?
It's been fun.
Yay. And will you be joining us again on the show next week?
You got it. I'll be back next week.
And John already gets a musical treat. Hippity, hippity, hoppy, honestly, like a bush kangaroo, really, but perhaps not. Booker T and the MGs there with the classic and strangely wonderful Green Onions, an ideal precursor, of course, too.
Notes from a Very Small Island can only mean it's time for our top Jersey correspondent, Anna Maria Lewis, on the Midweek Drive.
Were you a Green Onions person at all, Anna, or is it something that's...
I don't normally eat. Green
no,
onions.
Exactly.
I mean, I have red and yellow, but no, not green.
Well, there we are. It's just very important. One of our other colleagues, Rosie Langhorne, when she was with the Dance Troupe Legs & Co, did a routine to that, which is quite phenomenal. Anyway, we're hit over two decades, I think, in the 60s and then again in the 80s. And I introduce you to John Sawtelle, who's from Australia, where, John, you were, as well as a community radio show, you were also an academic, I believe, in Australia.
Of sorts, yes.
Doing...
Public health and community development.
There we are. And successfully so? I mean, nobody died on your watch.
They paid me, and yes.
Oh, sensational. So actually, I suspect whilst Anna and myself were actually doing Dulwich-based shows, you on the in the Southern Hemisphere might well have been doing community-based shows.
Yes, yes. Small community that we lived in, and a lot of local content and talent. And
go on,
yes.
give the radio station a name check.
Oh, Main FM.
Main
FM. Because we lived in Castlemaine, and nice. So Main FM, you know, we pondered for hours over that one.
I would have thought so. Yeah. You know, people say, Siren, it's not Siren City, is it? Well, of course it is. What else is it going to be called? By the by. Emma back with us, of course, as well. And Emma, would you like to quiz Anna on life, the universe, or indeed find out where in the world in Jersey she is today?
Oh, yeah. Where in Jersey are you? Are you anywhere different, or are you in your regular home?
Well, I'm not. I've just had a prowl around the local shops, because I don't know if Lincoln has these sort of massive periods of sales, and I just felt very, very kind of drawn towards the shops. But I'm actually in an area known as Liberation Square, which is, for those uninitiated, the Channel Lines were occupied by the Germans, and they were liberated in 1945, on the 9th of May by various liberators, and basically they asked someone to name the square, because before that it was just a bus station, and then they called it Liberation Square.
Well,
so that's where
I
am
now. That's much more interesting than just a bus station.
The bus station, yeah.
It puts colour on the text, but a bit of meat on the bones. Anna, are you ready to once again give a critique? Because what other critique kind of style is there to this week's little tune, which is, of course, the Drive Time disc, which is played Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday on the Drive Time shows hosted by our friends Sebastian Edgington-Cole and others, as far as things are concerned. Are you ready for this, Anna?
Yes, I am.
It comes replete with a special introduction from the artiste, yes, by Stuart Carr, as recorded by the aforementioned Sebastian Edgington-Cole.
It's about, you know, standing together and winning and everything like that, and joining up. And I wrote that for the Rugby World Cup. For Ridgeon, who wrote it with me, helped me with the song. So it's all about, you know, winning and standing tall and reaching your goals in life, really. Winning for the Rugby World Cup.
Oh, strength and shield, we stand and sing to thee, and our voices fill the heavens with a mighty melody. For now we know there's hope for one and all, and fearless in our hearts we stand a faith.
As we look forward to Fiji beating Australia. Current score, Australia 10, Fiji 3, just in case you're wondering.
Oh, at that time Australia had a win in some sporting arena.
Scotland 45, Japan 10. Had hoped Japan might have done it again after they beat South Africa. And, of course, coming up later, France versus Romania. But what does that actually have to do with Stuart Carr's Come On, Ye Faithful? Oh, see what they did there. Not a Christmas song, but his attempt, as we heard in the intro there, to inspire people for the Rugby World Cup. Has it impacted Jersey, Anna?
I don't know.
No.
I must admit, I'm slightly out of... I thought it was, personally, I thought it was a very good, rousing, patriotic kind of this.
That's okay.
And his voice is amazing. He's really, you know, he's got it.
Well, there we have it, you see. What did you make of it, Emma?
It was very, very good. Like, I was just thinking, like, listening to it, like, how do these people discover that they have such amazing operatic voices?
The shower, Emma. The acoustics in the shower, amazing.
I thought it was brilliant. We had choral tones in there as well. Yeah. So
soaring trumpets.
Yep, everything.
Could almost have
what
been a
more
one
could you want?
Could almost have been a One Direction farewell party, but no. So brilliant stuff. John, have you ever been to Jersey, by the way?
I haven't, but I'm curious what Anna got in the sales today. What did you buy?
Yes, Anna, what did you buy in the sales today?
To be honest, I didn't. I just look, because I went to London a couple of weeks ago, and if you go, well, London, as you know, is like the hub of all things. So,
well, apart from Sydney, Australia, of course.
We did Oxford Street Marble Arch in a day. It's exhausting, and my daughter and I just did that. So, yeah, I couldn't justify buying anything, to be honest.
No, I think that makes perfect sense in every sense of the word. So that's great stuff. So before we actually head up to Peter Miles to hear what he's got to think about the latest incarnation of Davros in the series Doctor Who, because, of course, Peter Miles has been in all sorts of Doctor Who scenarios and so on, Emma, would you like to put those last two questions to our official correspondent from Jersey? That would be, of course, Anna Lewis.
Of course. Anna, have you enjoyed your time on the midweek drive this evening?
I certainly have. Thank you.
And will you be joining us again on the show anytime soon?
I would be most pleased to. Thank you.
Hooray. Would you like a touch of the Osmonds, Anna? Take that as a no, then.
There was a time when I believed I could reach all of my dreams, and I could make it in this world alone. But as I tried to make my way through the forest, I would fall.
One of their recent releases, Can't Get There Without You, The Osmonds. Well, we can't get there without the actor without whom the series Doctor Who would just not have been the quality that it became in so many ways, whether it was Genesis of the Daleks or indeed many of the other incarnations which were blessed, and I say that quite deliberately, by the legend that is Peter Miles. Peter, good afternoon. How are you, sir?
We won't go into my health, but I'm pretty fit and well in the 99% of me.
Excellent.
I've just got trouble with a hip.
Peter, it's okay. We're sending positive vibes down the lines to you now from both Emma Tinson, John Sawtell and myself. So
how wonderful.
You will find miraculous things will happen just on the basis of this phone link. We really should be available on the NHS.
Yeah, we should.
Anyway.
Go on.
No, performed with the Birmingham Repertory Theatre, performed with the Royal Shakespeare Company, friend of the late, great Dusty Springfield, love of jazz music. There's so much more to Peter Miles than Doctor Who, and yet we keep coming back to that. The Facebook people went wild when they knew that you were actually watching, with Alan Stevens, no less, the first part, of course, of the two-parter that launched the new season. And we have to ask you, as somebody who is in the quintessential quality episode with Tom Baker, of course, and Terry Wisher, of course, as Davros. Was it Terry Wisher or was it Michael Malloy? It was Davros, Peter. Was it Michael Malloy or was it Terry Fisher? Terry Malloy, exactly. What did you make of the opener to the latest incarnation of Doctor Who?
I thought you'd ask me that.
Well,
first.
I'm dying
to get in a message to you lot.
Okay, well, do the message.
Can I hang off hack fire on that one?
Okay.
First of all, is it true that you're broadcasting it to Lincoln or in Lincoln?
That is very true, Peter. Exactly.
A quick message is that Peter Miles, in one of my first residential professional provincial theatres, was in the Theatre Royal Lincoln, and those 6 to 7 months were the happiest artistically and socially, in the sense of getting on with people, in my entire life as an actor. I've never been so happy as when I was at Lincoln.
Oh, that's lovely.
It is. It's amazing.
I could almost hear the listener, Peter, actually sort of curling up in a ball of warmth and happiness on that basis.
I came back years later on a tour for the lovely theatre company from the East England, based in Lincoln. It was a tour of quite a few counties, and I played the lead in A Man for All Seasons, which I particularly loved. Mm. Anyway, enough of Lincoln for the moment.
perfectly happy to share the wonder of Lincoln.
Yeah, my news bulletin, which will interest you immensely, is this week I was interviewed by a journalist come writer who works for BBC Big Finish and who I'd already worked for with Jacqueline Pierce on a Blake 7 extension CD, just the two of us. So I knew this writer. He said, I'm interviewing you, Peter, in your hometown, because everything you say now is going in next month's Doctor Who magazine.
Hey.
It's coming out next month.
Well, we already have this month's in our hands already. Yep. There we are, Emma, our posterity good self, with Wraparound Dalek cover there. And to think that Michael Wisher... he's listening to us from Heaven FM, of course. Peter Miles will be actually... It's truly wonderful in every sense of the word. Really.
What's very important, Alex, this is a public, huge thank you from me personally. For what happened to me during my 28-year career is that I ended in the 70s. I'm celebrating 40 years since we recorded Genesis of the Daleks, Tom Baker and I, and wonderful Michael Wisher as the first stunning Davros. Mm. What has resulted for the last 40 years is the incredible loyalty and basic affection and enthusiasm from the fans, both at conventions and in the Royal Mail delivery I get here, the last one being this morning. I mean, it's never stops.
What?
Even Michael Wisher would be stunned. It never stops. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it for those who are listening who may have mates in Britain who go to conventions or even write to me. I've got them all over the country. This is a big thank you to the producer and director of
Blake 7 and Doctor Who.
No, cross it off. of Genesis of the Daleks,
yeah.
And to the BBC for the spread of DVDs around the world, which is absolutely incredible, and the success in the ratings of Genesis is unbelievable.
It was a quality story, but equally we could say Doctor Who and the Silurians, in which you were Dr. Lawrence, and of course your role as Professor Whittaker in Invasion of the Dinosaurs.
With Martin Jarvis.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it all connects together. Emma.
Well, there's more, Alex.
There is indeed. Keep going.
Yeah, I love Paradise of Death on
yes,
radio.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
With the Brigadier and John Pertwee again. Yep. I thought that was wonderful, made in the 90s. Mm. And it was repeated.
And of course, Zygon's Absolution, and More Than the Messiah, the independent video productions as well.
Oh yes, I've worked with Sylvester.
And Alan would be most upset if we were so remiss as to forget to mention all the Caldor City delights that you brought to us. it's vital that's actually there. And Faction Paradox. So there we are. So when Alan's on air tomorrow morning, we can say, Julie, we've ticked that box.
Yes, Alex, you're asking me about the current new.
Yes, yeah. Indeed.
I find that interesting and difficult for me because two things are happening. One, it's the first episode, not with Peter Capaldi, he's already in the Doctor, but as the Doctor. For me, because I dare to compare the 20th century with the 21st century television, which is totally different, especially in sci-fi. Mm. You've got technical wonders going on the screen and sets which make you think you're watching now a very expensive movie. Mm. What they can do now, John Pertwee would just goggle in amazement at. So in our days, we had brilliant writers writing very strong parts for actors, and an immensely strong plot with a meaning behind it all. Do I make myself clear?
Indeed, and as John Sawtell has actually rightly said, our Australian guru here, a lot of use of...
It was another episode filmed in a quarry.
Quarries.
I adored the beginning that I saw on Saturday with Doctor Who, played by Capaldi, walking through the same battlefield on Skaro that I know well and probably shot quite a few people there.
Exactly.
it's
amazing you weren't sent to Australia, really, but never mind.
And it was lovely that he turned round to a little boy all alone in a minefield and said, "What's your name?"
Yeah.
That made my year, actually, when the boy said, "Davros." That just absolutely tickled me. I just love that.
I kind of felt, it seemed to be a little telegraphed, but at the end of the day I thought, yeah, okay, we can go with what we do. Of course, we had a little clip from Tom Baker's classic speech in the original Genesis of the Daleks. If I touch these two wires together, it could mean the end of everything. So,
yes.
Which was nice. Emma, you're a relative newbie to Doctor Who scenario. I haven't watched the episodes yet, but questions for Peter.
Yeah, Peter, I wanted to know, actually, is it quite difficult being an actor in Doctor Who? Because it's a programme unlike any other, really, or any other performance you might do in the acting business.
Is it different, did you say?
Yeah, is it different or difficult?
No. In my opinion, as an actor, every actor is different in his approach to work and his abilities. They're all different people. It's no different to me going on to do a farce in a theatre. Mm-hmm. It's a job with acting. You have to know your lines well. You have to know your character well. You have to do your moves well. You have to integrate with all the others to make it become a reality. It doesn't matter whether you're upside down in the moon or in Birmingham High Street.
Which can be the same as being upside down in the moon, let's be honest. Sorry, Birmingham people, but it's a fact of life.
Anyway, Alex, to answer your question, yeah, I think it's... episode one is what I call a promiser. With all those interesting assortment of Bassett's all sorts there, wonderful creatures and characters popping up and down in episode one, it's going to develop into something really interesting. And it's nice to see Davros again. And obviously he's not the exact twin of Michael Wisher, but I don't think we could do that. It would be too sad for words. But it's in the making of a similar Davros to the original one.
And I like to feel, Peter, that Michael Wisher, who blessed us back in 1985 with her radio appearance in Dulwich Radio and actually did his Dalek stuff in the studio, amazing. Yes, it's still there. In many ways, he paved the way for you joining the team, Peter. That's the important thing. Paved the way. We could go on to talk about Survivors, The Sweeney, Dixon of Dock Green, Moonbase 3 and so on, but our Australian colleague, John Sawtell, hitherto referred to as Australian colleague. John, you are a keen Dusty Springfield fan, are you not?
Look, I am, but just before, I'd just like to congratulate Peter on his work, and particularly Blake 7, which we received in Australia, and I think that's responsible converting me to being a big fan of science fiction. So, yeah, absolutely love Blake 7, so that was great work. But yes, Dusty Springfield, you knew Dusty. What's the story?
More than that, it was Peter who actually was on guitar for the first recording of Springfield.
No, I didn't play guitar.
You on guitar? I thought. Well, in which case, we have to obviously delete the reference we have there. Never mind.
The first recording is on sale somewhere in the world this very minute because it's released by Universal. It's three CDs and a DVD all in one imitation book-like shape. Yeah. And I'm on track one of CD two. Oh. Where Dusty and I recorded together. To your Australian friend, I'm saying that we met when we were both very young in our teens because I was a mate of her brother, who obviously lived with Dusty, or Mary as she is really, and I got to know the family terribly well, and because the brother got me into a vocal quartet with him as the director. In local gigs, there were four of us, of which Tom Springfield was the leader, and we recorded in a cheap studio, which was lovely fun, making records together, wonderful. Dear Dusty was sitting in the other room all the time, listening to us. After me going there for a couple of years to their flat, which is about 500 yards from where I'm sitting in Ealing, she said quietly to me, Peter, come in this room. I want to tell you something. She was very friendly and relaxed with me, although they're a bit enigmatic, but very nice indeed. And she said, you and I, we're going to make a record together called Can't We Be Friends, a jazz standard. And I said, oh, lovely. She was so brilliant at the rehearsals of showing me the arrangement and making me understand how she's going to do it. To her amazement, when we recorded it, and you can still hear it today, I ad-libbed did ad-libs in the middle of lines of the actual song, you know, because the words were fitted in with a twosome. So I'm talking to her in real life, if you like. She's talking to me about Can't We Be Friends, right?
Mm.
So I ad-libbed, which fitted in with the actual lyrics at the end of a line to her amazement. So she was taken by surprise, but carried on bravely.
I'm sure, Peter, that the text from Dusty to Davros is in the works as it speaks. You know, we can work on that sort of basis.
It's a good title.
What's the first name of your Australian friend?
That would be
John.
Is John there?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Yeah, I want to thank you for that. Did you know that this is my 21st year as a professional jazz singer?
No, I did not.
Oh, exactly. No. So. Not just an ace actor, but a professional jazz and soul singer.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and 21 years hard work has brought me to a standard where I've been asked back next year to one of our best London venues, which is called the Pheasantry in Kings Road, Chelsea. Mm-hmm. And the jazz there is booked by the head of jazz booking at the Pizza Express Soho in Dean Street, which is the co-important jazz club in Great Britain of Ronnie Scott's. There's Ronnie Scott's and the one in Dean Street. So those two are the top jazz clubs. Where the chief booker there sent me an email after the gig and said, please keep in touch with me.
Excellent.
We're going to have a little location report there, I think, Emma. We're going to have to check out Peter in action in the jazz. Peter, it's been absolutely splendiferous, to quote Ken Dodd. Well, he'll be with us later on in the programme, as will indeed Graham Harper. But would you like to ask those last two questions, please, Emma Tinson?
Yes, Peter, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this evening?
I have enjoyed it immensely, absolutely immensely. It fits in with this wonderful year of the 40th anniversary of Genesis, and the continuation of the love for it in this country and elsewhere by thousands and thousands of fans. Michael Wisher would be so tickle pink. I'm tickle pink, and I love talking to Alex and you and John and catching up with Lincoln again. God bless it.
Oh, lovely. Well, in that case, would you like to join us again on the show anytime soon?
Mm. Would I like to be returning on the show?
Yes.
I would adore it.
Hooray! Oh, lovely.
I just don't know what to do with myself. Don't know just what to do with myself. I'm so used to doing everything with you, planning everything for two. Come on back, I will be around, just waiting for you.
Splendid, and keeping links going as we approach 14 minutes to 6 o'clock as far as the UK is actually concerned on Siren 107.3 FM, which means it's time for this.
The Addams Family, Wonder Woman, The Green Hornet, Bonanza, Murder, She Wrote, The Mod Squad, Honey West, Ironside. Just some of the series which have benefited from the writing and producing genius of Arthur Weingarten. And now the legendary writer is live on the Midweek Drive. Prepare to be amazed.
We are prepared and we're ready, Arthur. How's life in California?
Oh, I got to tell you something. I am sitting outside on our patio overlooking this wildlife canyon while Annette is having her breakfast, and I can't think of anything better.
And, of course,
Ben. And you.
Well, there we are. Exactly. Well, we can formally welcome back to the studio once again Eva MacDonald. How are you, Eva?
I'm fine, thank you.
A little bit tardy today.
Hello,
but she's
Eva.
Here. Yeah, we've also got the return after lots of adventures in that magnetic part of the world, according to Eva, called the Isle of Man, which is Jessica Ward.
Hello.
Hello, Jessica.
And Emma Tinson, of course, is with us in top form as ever. So there we are.
Hello, Arthur.
Hello, Emma.
And we have a newbie, John Sawtell. Now, John, as we were a bit worried, Emma and myself here, because we realised could be tense. In fact, they're sitting actually next to each other. John is from Australia. Jessica,
good
of course.
Good day.
Straight.
Exactly. Jessica, of course, being
Annette just looked at me like, "What? Are you out of your mind?"
In fact, Annette was the last Australian who sat in the studio. I think before Jessica had actually got here, or maybe she is. I think you were here when Annette was.
So,
yeah, exactly. So who knows what could happen? Particularly as Australia beating Fiji 18-3 in the Rugby World Cup. So there we are. It's the halftime score. Anyway, I'm not the USA did win their opening game, actually, Arthur. So good news for rugby.
Saw part of that on BBC yesterday, and we saw the Maori doing their face dance and all that. Yes,
I always think that's very amusing,
very
actually. But you don't want to laugh because it's obviously meant to be taken seriously. But it is strangely amusing, the whole sort of haka. I think so. Yeah, I'm sorry, Jessica.
I'm offended.
The only problem is we have 16 presidential candidates here in the Republican Party who all do the same face.
Exactly. And don't get me started on Donald Trump. Who knows what could happen in that particular instance?
Well, he's 15 of the 16.
Yeah. It's the hair that impresses me, but still, never mind.
It is.
Progressing ever onwards, we mentioned obviously some of the shows you were responsible for. Did they cross over to Australia, John? Did many of them?
Yes, I would. In fact, May Gray, that is going back a long time, but I do remember watching May Gray.
I think Arthur was a little bit too young to be involved with the original.
I was going to say I was curious about May Gray, but the others definitely, Man from U.N.C.L.E. and of course the Addams Family, all did very well in Australia. Yeah.
And of course, Arthur loves the Australians so much. He married one, which is great. You know, it's lovely. Annette Andre, without no other wine gods.
Why not?
we're obviously having a little bit of a jazz riff here in honor of Peter Miles, etc. Let's go straight to Jessica. Jessica, what questions would you like to put to Arthur Weingarten? Because it's been a good few months since you last spoke.
It has been, actually. How are things going with you? Have you been up to
much
lately?
Oh, we're doing very well.
Sounds like it.
Really. Very well. I'm glad to talk to you again.
Oh, me too. How charming.
We passed on your best wishes to Sam Stone and, of course, the rest of the family, the delightful comments that you made about Lindsay Gold. So that's all positive. And, yes, if you want some science fiction folk to actually sort of connect with you, Emma is your girl as well. So we'll sort it through on that basis. To flag that up. So have you, in terms of ramifications and ramifications and so on, we were talking about the importance of humour and possibly the contemporary milieu. Coming up in a few moments, we'll be speaking to a comedian you may have heard of, Arthur, a certain Ken Dodd.
Oh, my favourite and Annette's.
Really?
Literally, I must tell you something. This is not a joke. Our daughter went to boarding school down in Bexhill on Sea. And we saw her during the day, and we were due to go back in the early evening back to London. And someone said, "Oh, you know who's at the pavilion? Ken Dodd." That was it. We stayed overnight to watch and bought tickets for Ken Dodd, our favorite guy. Can I tell you a very quick real story, true story about
Arthur.
Ken Dodd?
Absolutely.
Yes, here I am commandeering your show, but this is too good. This is too good to pass. My agent, Dennis Selinger at ICM for 25 years, was the raconteur of agents, theatrical agents, and people called from all over the world telling him jokes and all of that. One day, I'm sitting at lunch with him, and I say, "What's the latest?" He said, "Well, the latest actually isn't in a call-in." He said, "I had a breakfast with a whole bunch of our fellow agents at ICM. We were talking some business, and somebody says, 'Oh, you know, poor Ken Dodd, he's coming up for sentencing today in the court because he hadn't paid some of his taxes.' So they say, 'Oh, yeah, that's right. What do you think he'll get?' And one of the fellas said, 'Oh, I think 3 to 5. He said, "Yeah, but he'll do 8.
Yeah, I know.
Does
I know.
Anybody get that?
I get that because he's in the Guinness Book of Records for the longest comedic shows.
That's right.
And he just keeps going. An audience with Ken Dodd will just continue ever onwards. So it's quite astonishing.
Yes, may he live forever.
He's actually in the Guinness Book of Records for the world's longest ever joke telling session. A mere 1,500 jokes. 1,500 jokes in 3.5 hours.
That's
which,
crazy.
If you're doing the mathematics, works out at 7.14 jokes per minute.
Do you know what? I feel bad for the audience. They must be like hurting from laughter.
Yeah, that'd be a really good ab workout, wouldn't it? You have abs afterwards.
Oh, he's incredible.
It's astounding.
One of the scatological and at least polished enough to say over the radio was during that night, he said, oh, by the way, I just found out how the pencil sharpener was invented. And someone yelled out, tell us, Ken. And he said, have you ever looked at a cat when he raises his tail?
I know where we're going.
Oh, that's not nice.
It's strangely bizarre, and really, it's almost in the bring it back alive criteria, etc. Lord above stuff. You know, it's part of the whole sort of sequence. Yes, interesting enough, in 2012, at the age of 84, he played the Prince's Theatre in Clacton-on-Sea, Essex, on the 7th of July. Starting at 7:15 p.m., he continued until just before 9 p.m., and then actually returned at 10 p.m. and continued until 25 past midnight.
Bless him.
So you see, by comparison, 18 and a half hours contact time, it's mild. It's easy peasy. No worries at all. Emma.
Yeah, so Arthur, I heard that there were some forest fires in California, so I wanted to make sure that you and Annette were okay.
Exactly.
Oh, yes, yeah, thank you. There are 13 fires going up and down the state. None, thank goodness, near us. We're near San Diego, and there are none here. But they're devastating, just devastating. In one area north of San Francisco, at least 1,100 homes have burned. And it's devastating, absolutely devastating. The Sequoia National Forest, where the world's oldest trees, the tallest and largest trees you might know about, they're over 2,500 years old. They're now being threatened because of the dry conditions here, the drought.
Arthur, that's something we have in Australia, very similar to California with the bushfires. And the real worry for my friends back in Australia is they've had a very, very dry winter, which, as you would know, means summer's going to be a disaster. So I'm glad I'm in Lincoln.
Yeah.
Where in Australia we get the local council gives us these warnings what to do when there's a bushfire. I had something shoved under my door here in Lincoln, what to do in a flood. So quite different.
That's quite a stark
difference. Annette has relatives, of course, still there, and one of her closest relatives, a cousin, owns quite a bit of acreage up there on a farm just north of Sydney. And he has two ponds which he has to keep constantly filled because of fire threat.
Yes, wow. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, so, you obviously have to give thanks for where you are. Now, Arthur, we're celebrating, at least part of us are celebrating, 60 years of commercial television in Britain. It's 60 English years since the first commercial rolled out. It was for toothpaste. Colgate, actually.
That's it.
Shameless thing from that point of view. A good thing, Arthur, from a few years, because obviously a lot of your shows ended up being aired on commercial television, or would you say, no, much prefer the BBC? Ads free.
Oh, no. It was a wonderful thing, and I'm filled with anecdotes today. Annette and I were neighbors where we lived in Woodstock, New York, before coming here. The next property just below us was a woman who, with Lou Grade, started ITV, the very first commercial network. An American woman who had worked for Howard Hughes as a publicist on The Outlaw with Russell. What's her name?
Jane Russell. And, of
course,
the cleavage and the bra, designed, of course, by Howard Hawks.
Right. And she was in London living at the Savoy while that film was trying to get through the censors in London. And she knew Lou Grade, and they had dinner one night, and she said, you know, I think it's time to challenge the BBC. Do you want to make a run there? Talking about just sending out some franchises, do you want to make a run for the London one? And he said, why not? And that was it. And they had, that's how London Weekend started.
Exactly. And we have never looked, exactly, we have never looked back since. He does a quote that comes from Grace Dent, actually writing in The Independent this week, which I thought was a bit harsh. Kind of goes down the same sort of lines as one of the critics who once wrote about Charlton Heston in A Man for All Seasons. The most moving thing about this was Mr. Heston's hairpiece, which I still think was harsh. But
that's absolutely accurate. Dead on.
Yeah, well, and the line that we actually had from Grace Dent basically was referring to Dame Judi Dench Daniel Craig's letter in extolling the BBC's life-enhancing virtues, which was an enormous statement, according to Grace Dent, even for thespians who are mostly, frankly, barking mad after a lifetime of doing silly voices for money in rooms full of other thespians. I thought that was harsh. It's a different line in time. Arthur, do we get a sneak preview in terms of what Annette will be sharing with us with her audio missive from California next week?
Yes, yes, as a matter of fact, she was working, typing her thing this morning. Yeah, she's doing her memoir, which she has been doing for 109 years. And
it is a classic,
She's gaining on it. And she is going to give little tidbits from here and there. And I can release the title because she asked me this morning, you think it's a good one? And I did. It's called I'm Alive and Well and Living in the Past.
Fantastic. It's like a time traveler, you know, quite literally. You know, like I'm alive and well and living in the past. It'll just sing out with joy. Eva, would you like to ask those last two questions to Arthur Weingarten, please?
I would. Have you had an interesting telephonic link with us today?
I do. I love listening to myself.
Yay! I do too. Exactly. Yes. And hopefully we will be hearing again from you soon.
Yes, I certainly hope so.
It'd be October.
And hello and goodbye to you all. What a nice congregation you have in the studio.
We like the auditions have to be seen to be believed, actually. It's quite phenomenal. Up next, the man himself from Naughty Ash.
Tears for souvenirs are all